The brutal murders of 14-year-old Larry Ordway and his brother, 16-year-old Maurice Gordon, sent shockwaves through the Louisville community where the brothers' bodies were found. Following up on a tip from the assistant principal at the boys' school, police were able to identify Larry and Maurice. And they had already talked to the boys' mom, Elizabeth Wren, but they hadn't released the identities of the boys to the public yet. And the community was incredibly uneasy about what had happened and what kind of person is still on the loose in their neighborhood. Elizabeth Wren was able to point police in the direction of 25-year-old Bryce Rhodes, a local rapper who brags about being in the Louisville drug and gang scene. The boys were last seen getting in the car with Bryce on Saturday. Their bodies were found Sunday, dumped in the yard of an abandoned house, bloodied and burnt. A forensic artist was able to come up with some renderings that were released publicly Monday, and by Tuesday, police had identified the boys and named Bryce as their main suspect. Detectives knew they would need more than just a sighting of the boys getting in a car with Bryce. And the big break that they needed came unexpectedly from Larry and Maurice's mom when she explained that the reason that she didn't report her sons missing is because when she called Maurice's phone, their best friend, Anwan, answered. And he said the boys were fine.
My name is Brandy Churchwell, and this is 13th Juror Podcast, where we unravel complex court cases and present them as compelling stories, breaking down the details and weighing the evidence from a non-legal perspective, just like jurors do. Today, we are taking a look at the tragic murder of three Louisville natives who were all in the wrong place at the wrong time, and the man responsible for those deaths, Kentucky rapper Bryce Rhodes.
Fifteen-year-old Anwan Carter was at home, lying on his bed, messing with Maurice's phone when detectives knocked at the door. Anwan's mom answered the door and allowed Detective Jason Vance to come in.
It was a bi-level house, so when you walked into the living room, immediately to the right, and I had a clear view into a bedroom up a short set of stairs, and I observed an individual on a cell phone, and when he saw me, he took the cell phone immediately, concealed it under the mattress.
Who was that individual?
Anwan Carter.
Did the cell phone belong to Maurice Gordon?
Yes.
When Elizabeth Wren told detectives that a friend had answered her son's phone, they immediately contacted the U.S. Marshals, who were able to ping the location of the phone and trace it directly to Anwan's house. Anwan had kept Maurice's phone after the murders, and at 15 years old, he didn't even know that it was possible to have the phone traced to a location. They were then able to bring Anwan in to the station so that detectives could interview him and ask some questions about what he knew and how he had Maurice's phone. Meanwhile, police need to get in touch with Bryce. Larry and Maurice's uncle TJ knew where Bryce's apartment was, but he didn't know the number or the address, which police needed for a warrant. Uncle TJ rode along with a detective to Bryce's apartment, and the plan was for the detective to just kind of walk through the apartment building so that he could get the apartment number, then they would leave. But while they were trying to do that, Bryce showed up, driving a black Dodge Charger. The detective stayed outside in his unmarked car, watching. Bryce wasn't home long. He left soon after arriving, and the detective, along with Uncle TJ, followed him. Bryce must have picked up on the fact that he was being followed, because he began driving all around, making turns, driving in one direction and then turning around and going back. The detective becomes nervous, because he has Uncle TJ in the car with him, and he doesn't want Bryce to see him, and he doesn't want to put him in danger, so he drops TJ off at a tire shop for his safety, then tries to find Bryce again. Shortly after this, police spotted Bryce and were able to arrest him at a gas station on Preston Highway. Cause of arrest? He had an outstanding warrant and a domestic abuse case out of Indiana. The black Dodge Charger that Bryce was driving was registered to a car rental company, and they traced the rental back to a guy that lived in Bryce's apartment complex. They talked to him, and turns out he let Bryce borrow the car a couple of times. Once was that day, which was a huge mistake since now police have seized it, and also on Saturday, which is when Larry and Maurice were seen getting in a black Charger to leave home and never return again. While they're talking to this neighbor, he tells detectives that Bryce's car that he normally drives is a blue Mazda, which was in the parking lot at the time. Detectives decide to go take a look. As they approached it, they first noticed that one of the windows was down, and as they got closer, there was an overwhelming bleach smell that raised all kinds of red flags. All of us true crime and justice junkies know that's a bad sign. Another red flag, the back seat had been removed, and the carpet had been removed from the trunk. Police are able to get a search warrant for Bryce's Mazda and the apartment that he shares with his mom. Just like the Mazda, the apartment had a strong smell of bleach, and detectives noticed it the second they opened the door. In the apartment, they find some items of interest. There's a hammer and some knives that are found under a mattress, so the knives are collected for testing. They also sprayed luminol throughout the apartment to test for the possible presence of blood. Luminol is a chemical that lights up with a blue glow when mixed with an oxidizing agent, like blood. So investigators will spray it anywhere that they think that there might be blood, like a crime scene that has been cleaned, where it's hard to visually tell if there's any trace of blood. In Bryce's apartment, the luminol lit up in a large area on the living room carpet. The area was so large that the forensics team decided to pull the entire carpet up and take it to the lab for testing. They moved the furniture out of the way, carefully cut the carpet around the edges, and worked together to roll up the carpet, leaving nothing but the padding underneath. When they got to the area where the luminol had reacted, investigators looked down to see huge, dark stains on the padding. There had been so much blood that it soaked through the carpet and completely saturated the padding underneath. They knew then that they were looking at the scene of the murders. Back at the station, detectives began to ask Bryce questions about Larry and Maurice, but only asked about them missing. They don't yet tell Bryce that they know that the boys have been murdered. Bryce plays it off, kind of trying to distance himself from the boys, saying they were cool because they all played basketball together sometimes, but he was cool with a lot of people.
You close to these kids at all?
Pretty cool. We play basketball. I'm cool with a lot of people.
Well, let me ask this. How tight were you with them? Did you hang out with them on a regular basis?
That was cool. Yeah, we hung out different times. You know, different times.
All right. Did
you went to the park, play basketball, you know, might go out to eat or something. That was cool. I mean, everybody was cool. It was like it's a big neighborhood. Everybody hangs with everybody. Everybody's cool.
They ask Bryce if he knows anyone else in the family, and Bryce tells detectives that he briefly dated their mother, Elizabeth Wren, last summer.
I used to date their mother probably like last summer. Used to talk to her and stuff. Not date her, but like just kind of like hang out. Eat, hang out, we'd go to get something to eat or something. But we just quit talking. And then I just see them at the basketball courts and stuff like that. But everybody was friends. Everybody was friends.
Bryce doesn't say anything about having seen the boys on Saturday. In fact, he tells detectives that the last time he saw them was last Tuesday. He thinks at the Circle K around 4 p.m. They ask when the last time he was at their house was, and he said it was probably that same day. Bryce basically tells the detectives that he wishes he could help find these kids. He's so concerned for others. Bryce tries to point their attention in other directions, telling detectives that Larry and Maurice hung out sometimes with a 25-year-old guy named Joe, but he doesn't know Joe, he's just heard the name. He also tells them that Larry and Maurice's mom, Elizabeth Wren, was an alcoholic and she's on heroin, so the boys were always gone from home, and he would ask why they weren't in school. He also says they were in a gang, but he doesn't know which one, and he says that they would always be getting in fights at the basketball courts. But Bryce would tell the boys when that happened that people come there to play basketball, not for all that mess. So they needed to take that negativity around the corner somewhere. What a community hero. Detectives realize that they aren't getting anywhere, so they thank Bryce for his time and leave the room. They come back a few minutes later and tell Bryce that they have video of him in the black Dodge Charger in front of Elizabeth Wren's house on Saturday. Now, this isn't true. There's no video. But they want Bryce to believe that there is so that he'll fess up to going over there. It works, and detectives now have Bryce admitting that he drove the Charger to Larry and Maurice's house on Saturday. Detectives then swap over to their next interview, Anwan. That doesn't go well. He doesn't want to say anything. He's scared, and he wants to stay silent. He plays it off like, Bryce is great, and everything's great. I'm great. I don't know anything. Then he asked for a lawyer, so things stop right there. At least for a little while. Anwan has a chance to talk to his mom while at the station. And whatever that conversation was enough to make Anwan realize that he needed to tell the truth. He tells detectives that he's willing to talk to them. Another interview is done, and Anwan tells detectives everything. He lays it all out there. He tells them about being dropped off at Bryce's with Ja'Cory. Now, this is the first time that detectives have heard of Ja'Cory, so they start working to get him in there for questioning as well. Anwan tells them about the boys being stabbed and how Bryce said that he burned the bodies. He tells him about cleaning the apartment with bleach, and he tells them about taking the evidence to different dumpsters in Bryce's Mazda, getting rid of the evidence, and then setting the dumpsters on fire. This is also brand new for investigators. So they pull up records looking for any reports of people who called in any dumpster fires on Sunday or Monday. And they're able to find a few. They send out a forensics team to check it out, and the forensics team was able to locate pillows, blankets, sheets, a shoe, all kinds of things. And when they were tested, they were confirmed to have the victim's blood on them. Everything Anwan is telling them is corroborated by the evidence. Now that investigators know what happened, they want to know why. They ask Anwan why this all happened, and Anwan tells Detective Vance that Bryce thought that Larry and Maurice were telling the police things about him shooting someone in the park earlier this month.
I'll talk about why this all happened.
This is because they was telling police things.
Okay, what were they telling?
That Rambo shot somebody by the park.
When was that?
This was this month.
This month? The guy died? What's the circumstances there?
I don't even know what that means.
What happened? Why'd he shoot that guy?
I don't know. Because he has some money in his head.
And just like that, the murder of Christopher Jones is able to be solved. Detective Vance contacts the lead detective in Jones's murder, and this unlikely connection is able to finally give Christopher Jones' family the answers that they deserve. 7 hours after Bryce's arrest, investigators had enough evidence to charge him with tampering with evidence, as well as multiple counts of murder. Bryce pled not guilty during his arraignment, and he was jailed on a $1 million cash bond. Word got around that the boys found in the abandoned yard were Larry and Maurice. The boys had been in some of Bryce's music videos that he made, waving guns around and trying to look as tough as a 14 and 16-year-old child can look. There were also photos floating around social media of the boys with firearms, and their mother, Elizabeth, came under attack after sharing some of those photos on her social media. But Elizabeth insisted that the boys weren't in any gangs. She said they were just trying to look tough. On Wednesday, May 25th, the day after Bryce's arrest, dozens of neighborhood residents gathered for a vigil at the park where the boys liked to play ball. The grief and mourning of the community made to feel even heavier with the pouring rain. Blue and silver balloons were released in honor of Larry and Maurice, and police hovered nearby, knowing that a third suspect, Ja'Cory Taylor, was still on the loose, though that information had not been released to the public at that point. The emotional vigil came to a head when Elizabeth began shouting at the crowd, telling them that they need to stop bashing her on Facebook and come together for the kids. A woman nearby hugged Elizabeth, and the two held on to each other, sobbing, before Elizabeth went limp and fell to the soaking wet ground in grief. Later that day, police found 17-year-old Ja'Cory Taylor and brought him in, where he was also charged for the deaths of his friends, Larry and Maurice. Like Anwan, Ja'Cory didn't tell police everything at first. He was scared. He had seen what Bryce did to Larry and Maurice when he thought that they were talking to police. Eventually, he also came around and made a statement to police about what had happened that night. Bryce was given a copy of a police statement transcript while he was locked up, so he knew that Ja'Cory had talked to police. The district attorney's office had decided to pursue the death penalty against Bryce for the murders because of the aggravating circumstances and brutality behind them. So he knew that if he was convicted, there's a good chance he would be sentenced to death. So he needed to stop Jacory from testifying. Bryce and Jacory were both being held at Metro Corrections, so Bryce arranged for someone in the jail to hand-deliver a note to Jacory. On the police statement transcript, Bryce had written the words, "Rats get exposed." Bryce's letter said, quote, "Between us, you know what you said. I got the paperwork. So look, here's where shit gets real," end quote. He told Jacory that he needed to recant his statement to police to prove that he's not a rat. He wrote out a list of reasons Jacory could use to recant and told him to copy it in his own handwriting, then flush the letters from Bryce. He also told him not to accept any plea offers from the prosecutors because all they have as far as evidence goes is he say, she say. Bryce tells Jacory not to testify against him, even if they offer him something for his testimony. He tells him to stay focused, and he ends the threatening letter with, "Love you." Bryce's first court appearance after the arraignment was held on May 31st, and right from the beginning, prosecutors and the judges could tell that Bryce would be a big issue. Bryce had hired a defense attorney right after he was arrested, someone that apparently knew his mother. But less than a week into things, the attorney realized that the victims were the grandchildren of his close friend, so he needed to recuse himself from the case. Bryce wasn't happy about this. He and his attorney were in a holding cell when he broke the news to Bryce that he had to recuse himself, and Bryce's response was to spit on him. The deputy nearby jumped in between Bryce and the attorney, and when they made it inside the courtroom, the attorney let the judge know that it would be best to keep them at a distance. When he was leaving, the attorney looked at Bryce and said, "Nice cheap shot." Bryce was handcuffed with a deputy on each side of him, but that didn't stop him from yelling back at the attorney, calling him a coward and telling him, "I'll see you when I get out."
Nice cheap shot. You a coward. Nice cheap shot.
In another hearing, days later, Bryce can be seen smiling while detectives described the murders and listed out the evidence. In August of 2016, Bryce attacked a fellow inmate, knocking him to the floor and telling him that he will kill him like he did the others. 2 weeks after that, Bryce spat on another inmate. Both of these incidents were caught on the jail's cameras. Bryce was brought into court for the assault charges that he just earned himself, and because of Bryce's aggressive and erratic behavior, he was brought in strapped down in a restraint chair and wearing a spit mask. Bryce is wheeled in the courtroom with his wrists and ankles strapped to this chair, his face covered by the spit mask, and it looks more like a scene with Hannibal Lecter instead of a failed Louisville rapper. The restraints didn't keep Bryce under control, though. He wasn't happy that he had to wear them, and he made it known to Judge White. She tells him multiple times to stop talking, and finally asks, "Are you done?" Bryce replied, "No, I ain't done." When Judge White continues on with his charges, he tells her that he will find out where she lives and kill her and her whole family.
"You've been charged with assault in the fourth degree. I'm going to keep talking because I don't want to have to see you back here for this. So you're saying you're going to find out where I live at? Okay."
Those threats added on more charges for terroristic threats and intimidating a participant in the legal process, on top of the assault and terroristic threat charges that he was in court facing for his previous outburst. A few weeks later, Bryce was in the day room at Metro Corrections, and he decided that he didn't want to return to his cell. He began breaking and throwing cleaning supplies. He ripped up an inmate observation document, and then he took a broken broom handle and started swinging it at the glass window, trying to break the window where an officer was standing behind it. He was yelling at the officer, telling her that he wanted her to come in there, and he said he was going to kill her. The outburst landed him some more charges. Then, less than a week later, Bryce threw urine through the crack of his cell door, hitting an officer in his head, neck, and ear. In January of 2017, Bryce tried to dig a hole with a metal object to escape his jail cell. An officer noticed a man-made hole under the cinder blocks, and then they saw the metal object. And when they tried to confiscate the object, Bryce quickly grabbed it and flushed it down the toilet. He was charged with first-degree criminal mischief, second-degree escape, and tampering with physical evidence. All more felonies to add to his growing list. Bryce's nonsense continues for years. In 2020, Bryce accuses the judge of having a sexual relationship with a prosecutor, and he accuses him of being a racist and asks if he's a secret member of the Ku Klux Klan.
I don't know if y'all got some type of sexual relationship going on or what y'all got going on, but I'm definitely going to speak my mind.
Detective Detelli and I have no sexual relationship.
Now I'm talking about you and a prosecutor over here, sir.
All right,
you denied all my motions. Every motion I filed, you didn't deny it.
Pretty sure I've denied the vast
every motion I've
had. Same motions that have ever.
Are you some type of racist? Are you y'all got some type of sexual relationship going on? Which one is it?
Or are you just wrong in everything that you've made a motion for?
Are you a secret Ku Klux Klan member?
No, sir. I'm
is that
not.
What you really are?
Nope.
Okay.
I'm not.
But like I said, the higher courts, they'll deal with it when time comes necessary.
That's exactly right.
Exactly.
And
so say less.
In April of 2021, Bryce is in court asking for another attorney for the third time, claiming that his attorneys are racist and telling the judge, quote, "Your job is to do your job and not worry about me. I worry about me. You worry about your goddamn self." He then tells Judge Cunningham, "You're going to find out, though, real quick. I promise you that," as he's being taken out of court. In May of 2021, more charges were added when Bryce threatened another officer, telling him that he would shank him in the face and that the officer and his entire family would die. That same month, Bryce was in court sitting at the defense table while Larry and Maurice's mother, Elizabeth, sat in the gallery behind him. Bryce taunted the victim's mother, turning around, smiling at her, blowing her kisses, making gestures towards her, until finally there's an outburst. And Elizabeth Wren is told that she will be removed from court if she can't control herself.
Crows in the top.
Ma'am.
Stop it.
Look at me.
Ma'am!
The judge then addresses Bryce, saying he doesn't know why he's smiling. Bryce replies, "Because I can."
Mr. Rhodes, you're smiling. I don't know why you're smiling.
Because I can.
Well?
Because I can. It's not a crime to smile.
It's not a crime.
Continue what you were saying.
But it doesn't help you, all right, to irritate people.
All right.
And you have a lot at stake in this case.
It's not a crime to smell, is it?
I didn't say you were committing.
Okay, then.
I'm saying you're not helping yourself.
Continue what you were saying.
I'm
allowed to smell.
I would suggest you do what helps you, not what hurts you.
Okay.
Bryce then tells the judge, "I do what I want to do. Let's get that understood." Then tells the judge to continue with what he was saying.
That's what I want to do.
Well, let's get that understood. That's fine.
Let's get that understood.
I'm sorry?
Let's get that understood.
Why? You may not
understand. Continue what you were saying about the motions.
Bryce's antics ended up calling into question whether or not he was competent to even stand trial. The judge, who would eventually be the trial judge in the triple murder trial, Judge Julie Kalin, ruled that Bryce is competent to stand trial. However, she ruled that Bryce is intellectually disabled and suffers from serious mental illness, which she says means that he is not eligible for the death penalty. It would take almost 8 years for Bryce Rhodes to finally stand trial. Because of his previous antics, Bryce was forced to wear a stun cuff during court proceedings, which means if he had any kind of outburst, court officials could press a button that would zap him. On the first day of trial, Larry and Maurice's family members were in the gallery, along with the family and children of Christopher Jones. Prosecutor Crit Cunningham got up in front of the jury to give the opening statements, letting the jury know the horror of what's to come in this trial. While he's talking, a photo of the young brothers' bodies is placed on the projector. The jury sees these two children lying side by side in an overgrown, grassy yard, bloody, burnt, and touching each other for what would be the last time. Opening statements weren't even complete yet when multiple jurors began to sob. The defense attorney, Wesley Boyarsky, gives her opening statements as well. She tells the jury that the people responsible for these deaths are the snitches who are trying to put the blame on Bryce, and she tells them that they are not reliable witnesses and can't be trusted. The day wraps up with testimony from the detectives and the first officers on the scene who responded to the shooting death of Christopher Jones. On day two, witness after witness is called to give their piece of the tragic puzzle. The search warrant for Bryce's apartment, the detectives who conducted the interviews, the forensic team, and the neighbor who let Bryce borrow the black Dodge Charger. And the last witness for the day of day two is Anwan Carter. Anwan, who was only 15 at the time of the killings, was given a plea deal in exchange for his testimony. He entered a guilty plea in late 2016 to facilitation of murder charges and tampering with evidence. He stayed in the Kentucky Department of Juvenile Justice facility until he turned 18. Then, he went before a judge who was to decide if he should serve the remainder of the recommended 10-year sentence in an adult facility or be granted probation for 5 years. The judge agreed to give Anwan probation. He wanted to leave Kentucky because of concern for his safety, so Anwan planned to move to Florida to be with his family and to have a fresh start. However, sadly, Anwan wasted his second chance at life. He showed up to testify in handcuffs and an orange prison jumpsuit. He's currently incarcerated in the Florida prison system for all kinds of charges related to burglary, theft, possession of a firearm, etc. Anwan is on the stand and he lays out the details of what happened for the jury. He's hard to hear sometimes. He mumbles and he speaks very low, and the attorneys are having to ask him to repeat answers quite often. He doesn't show a lot of emotion, and even though he's now in his early 20s, he seems to be forever stuck as the 15-year-old kid that we see in the interrogation video. Scared, uncomfortable, and unsure of himself. Day 3 starts with some CSI testimony as well as detectives and the medical examiner. Then it's time for the final star witness, Ja'Cory Taylor. Ja'Cory also took a plea deal in exchange for his testimony against Bryce. He pled guilty to 3 counts of complicity to murder and a 4th count of tampering with physical evidence. He was given a sentence of 10 years and was released after serving almost 6. Unlike Anwan, Ja'Cory showed up to testify in street clothes as a free man. He's asked his name, which he answers, but then when he's asked how he's connected to the case, Ja'Cory shuts down, not answering, causing the judge to step in and tell him that he needs to answer the question.
How are you connected to this case?
You need to answer the question. Sir, you need to answer the question.
Sir, did you know Larry and Maurice?
Yes, ma'am.
The prosecutor moves on to start asking questions in a way that gets Ja'Cory to answer. She asks how he knew Larry and Maurice, and Ja'Cory answers, "They were my friends." He acknowledges that Anwan is his cousin, but when he's asked if he knows Bryce, he shuts down again, not wanting to answer. The judge stops the proceedings and sends the jury out for about 10 minutes. She has Ja'Cory, an attorney, the prosecutors, and defense attorneys approach the bench. The prosecutor tells the judge that Ja'Cory isn't being deliberately evasive, but he's just really freaking out right now. Ja'Cory hangs his head. He fidgets and swivels in his chair. He's noticeably uncomfortable and is visibly upset. He tries to hold back his emotion and he tries to hide the fact that he's crying, as Bryce sits just a few yards away, staring at him. When the jury is brought back in, questioning continues, and Ja'Cory answers the questions about who he knows, how he knows them, how they met, and what they do when they all hang out. He's still visibly crying, but trying to hide it. When the prosecutor begins questioning about the murder of Christopher Jones, Ja'Cory shuts down once again not wanting to talk.
Hey, Mr. Taylor, I want to turn to the May 4th incident.
I ain't got nothing to say.
Sir, leading up to May 4th of 2016, can you tell us what happened?
I ain't got nothing to say. I respect what y'all doing here, but I ain't got nothing to say about the incident.
Well, that's not true, right? You don't want to, right? But you do have something to say.
She continues to try to question Ja'Cory, and he stares down, not answering, still crying. The judge sends the jury out again and gives Ja'Cory time to talk to his attorney. She lets Ja'Cory know that if he continues to not answer, he could lose his prior plea deal and the previous charges against him can be reinstated. About 15 minutes later, Ja'Cory returns to the stand. For 2 hours, Ja'Cory answers questions, walking through the horrific events of May 2016. Everything he says corroborates the testimony from Anwan and lines up with the evidence. He comes across as sincere, honest, and traumatized. Fear and remorse seem to hang heavy in the air with every answer that he gives. He breaks down crying, saying they were scared, and he knew that he couldn't save Larry and Maurice.
I just know once we was in it, there was no, you know, we involved pretty much, we there. We just, you know, so we just as guilty, we there. Couldn't do nothing, though. I mean, I was scared. So it was all scared. I don't know. I just know couldn't really save him.
Ja'Cory was the state's final witness. Closing arguments were done, and Bryce's fate was handed over to the jury at around 5:45 p.m. After less than 4 hours of deliberations, the jury returned a verdict.
We, the jury, found the defendant guilty of murder.
Bryce Rhodes was found guilty on all counts. Guilty of the murder of Christopher Jones, guilty of the murder of Larry Ordway, guilty of the murder of Maurice Gordon. Guilty of tampering with physical evidence, guilty of the abuse of a corpse for Maurice, and guilty of the abuse of a corpse for Larry. The following morning, the sentencing phase began. The prosecutors and defense both argued why Bryce should or shouldn't be given the opportunity to eventually be eligible for parole, and then the jury heard from family members of the victims. Chris Jones' brother tells the jury how the murder of his brother has impacted their family, and how hard it's been on his children. He said his brother was a good man, and now he'll never have the opportunity to know his granddaughter. Deborah Wren, the grandmother of Larry and Maurice, took the stand next.
How has this crime affected your family?
I can't even begin to tell you how this has been. Nothing is the same. Jeffy, we just can't get over it. We cannot. We don't know how to deal with it. It's been 7 years and 7 months. And all the things we used to do, go to the boys' ball games, birthday parties, Christmas, everything. It's just not the same without them.
The prosecutor also lays out for the jury the various convictions of Bryce Rhodes. She writes each of the charges on a whiteboard in front of the jury so that they can see how extensive and serious Bryce's rap sheet is, not even including all the charges that he's racked up since getting arrested, but also, and more importantly, so that they can see that he is not capable of handling probation. He was convicted of 3 counts of intimidation and 1 count of carrying a handgun without a license. Then 4 counts of armed robbery, 1 count of criminal confinement. Then another conviction for assault, 4th-degree domestic violence with minor injury. And another conviction for 2 counts of battery resulting in bodily injury. And another conviction for assault, 4th-degree domestic violence, minor injury. That's 4 or 5 different convictions at different times. And those are all different sentences that he was given for each. Bryce Rhodes violated his probation every single time. The jury heard from a few more witnesses over the course of 2 days and then began their deliberations on Bryce's sentence. It took less than an hour for them to decide that Bryce would spend the rest of his life behind bars with no chance at parole. The police remained pretty quiet about the involvement of Tieran Coleman. Tieran pled guilty in July of 2017 to facilitation of murder for the deaths of the brothers, as well as tampering with evidence and 2 counts of abuse of a corpse. Grandparents of the victims carried framed school photos of the brothers to court for Tieran's sentencing, asking the judge to send him to prison. Tieran was sentenced to 10 years. The other guy who was there that day has never been named. Bryce will never walk the streets free again, but the damage that he's done means that the lives of so many people will never be the same. Christopher Jones' son is playing football and knows that his dad would be proud. He never got to meet his granddaughter, but the family makes sure to talk about him so that she knows how amazing her grandfather was. Larry and Maurice are remembered by their family for their fun spirits, their love of sports and music, and their sense of humor. Their mother has cautioned other parents to pay close attention to who their kids hang out with, warning that the company that they keep may prove to be dangerous. So while the families try to pick up the pieces and move forward with their lives without their loved ones, Anwan Carter is still serving time in the Florida prison system. And Ja'Cory Taylor has been given a second chance at life, one that he does not plan on messing up. If you're enjoying 13th Juror Podcast, please leave us a review on Apple and Spotify, and share this episode with your friends. For more information, photos, and episode guides, visit 13thjurorpodcast.com.